Psalm 1 is thought to be something of a preface to the 149 others that follow. It sets out, it sums up what is to come, and not only in the Psalter, in the collection of poems and songs to which people of faith have long turned in piety and in worship. Psalm 1 sets out and sums up the vision of a whole genre of writings in the Bible, often called wisdom literature, which includes the books of Ecclesiastes and Proverbs and the Song of Solomon. The thread that ties all these together is an assumption they share, that, in short, if you live wisely, you will live well. God gives us to know right from wrong, and if we apply ourselves to this knowledge, if we study it and then shape our lives around it, all will be well. Sin is likened to foolishness. Fools should know better than to make the bad choices they do, but alas, they will demonstrate poor moral judgment and they will suffer the consequences. All will not be well for them. If you want to feel good, then do good. And if you feel bad, well, maybe you're to blame. This may seem simplistic, may seem in need of qualification, but it is not entirely untrue. Most parents quite reasonably put rules into place. Don't run in the house. Look both ways before you cross the street. The idea is to keep children from getting hurt. Listen to mom and dad, or you will end up in a full body cast. No fun. Psalm 1 sets out and sums up this basic premise. Happy, happy is the one whose delight is in the law of the Lord. Now, lest the word law there throw you for a loop, know that law in the Bible, law is mostly not like Cops and Robbers or NBC courtroom procedural kind of law. The Hebrew is Torah. It's Torah, and it means teaching or guidance. Teaching or guidance that is shared and explored in a relationship of openness and trust and love. So think of the law of the Lord as the guidance God gives. And we can be said to delight in this, to delight in being guided by God, because to be guided by God, to be led by God, is to be loved by God. Like, that God cares. That God cares to give us guidance in the living of our lives shows us that our lives are of concern and of worth to God. Guidance is the guide's own gift of love. We delight in the Torah, in the teaching, because the Torah, the teaching, is a sign of the teacher's delight in us. The teacher's delight to shape and to share with us in our journeys of learning and becoming. The line the psalm ends with about the Lord watching over us on the way. Watching over is how the NRSV translates the Hebrew verb yada, to know, which some of you may know is very often in the Bible a euphemism for intimate relations. One scholar with a poet's sensibility has opted instead here for embrace. God embraces us on the way. That's what the law of the Lord or the guidance God gives us is. God's loving embrace of our lives in gracious caring regard for our good. The presence with us of a teacher, of a guide, the touch upon our lives of this one who counsels and challenges and changes us, the presence, the touch is a gift of love, a gift of self even, all its own. Living for God is an outgrowth of this living with God. And outgrowth actually gets at it well. The psalmist says that when we meditate on the good God wants for our lives, the old King James has us meditating in it, which comes closer to capturing the absorbing and mystical nature of meditating. When we meditate in, when we meditate on the good God wants for our lives, when we dwell with all God wishes for us, when we get inside, when by passionate worship, by our study of the scriptures, by our holy conversations, by our disciplines of private prayer, by our times of deep solitude and stillness and just being, when we get inside God's vision of who we would become, when we apply ourselves to considerations of right and wrong, the psalmist says that we will grow, and we will grow, and we will grow to be like great trees flourishing by living waters, planted in the presence of the Holy One, with the spiritual roots we put down stretching out and deeper, we will drink God in. The longings for us of God's heart, they will be the sustenance of our lives. Our thirsting souls will be watered. We will rise and rise as a tree beside a stream stands to the skies. And there will come to be a beautiful fullness to us. There will come to be a blossoming. The psalmist says that there will be branches twisting upward and out, straining to the sun under the weight of all the fruit they bear. The psalmist says, our lives will flower and bear fruit. We'll put forth fruit, spiritual fruit, like it's God in and then God out. Like when our souls drink at the source of all love, love will bloom in us. And when our souls drink at the source of all joy, joy will bloom in us. And when our souls drink at the source of all peace, peace will bloom in us. We will flourish. There will be a profusion in us of what is rich and sweet. Our lives will give off an abundance of that which makes for happiness, for true and abiding happiness. By contrast, the psalmist says, by contrast, sadly, some live without attachment to God, without attachment to the deepest questions and mysteries and values. Instead of putting down spiritual roots, instead of planting themselves in holy ground, some pursue the sort of bad company which corrupts good character. They set themselves, we see them in the psalm, first walking, then standing, then finally setting down among those unconcerned with God, unconcerned with what is good. But this is shallow living. Without a strong regard for, without a strong hold on right tossed about. They are uprooted and toppled by the feeblest winds of fortune. Storms come and they fall apart. They fall to pieces. They are the opposite of trees standing. They are little stalks felled. They are the opposite of choice fruit. They are chaff. Now, surely there is wisdom in this. In this vision, Psalm 1 sets out and sums up. Our moral choices have consequences. Now, you can be forgiven, but our moral choices still have consequences. And over the course of a lifetime, these consequences add up so that we can indeed be said to prosper or to suffer, at least in part, because of decisions we have made. Finding ourselves, as we do, in a cultural moment where it feels as if the moral foundations of the world are crumbling beneath us, where considerations of right and wrong no longer pertain, where rules are flouted, and at the highest levels there is a sense, ethically, of just making it all up as we go along, I think we must affirm the fundamental truth of this psalm, that there is right and there is wrong, and by God, there's going to be a reckoning. At the same time, however, I think we have to acknowledge that what this psalm has by way of wisdom, it lacks in compassion. Good morals will not totally protect you against bad luck, against all trouble, and against all loss, and against all sadness. Accidents and illnesses and death strike with terrible caprice. And we are all very much at the mercy of others whose sin and foolishness can strip us of the comforts of our virtue. The book of Job is also traditionally included in the corpus of wisdom literature, and its wisdom is that bad things do indeed happen to good people. That being the case, maybe we might amend Psalm 1 to end by saying something like, the rain falls on the just as well as on the unjust. Storms will come. But to be struck down is not necessarily to be destroyed. A great tree that has fallen is still much more than chaff, than an empty husk, than a shell of grain flying here and there. People of ardent faith, good people do fall. And in those seasons when they are, in those seasons when you are brought low, let God grant you to be what is called, you can see one out on the Com Ave Mall, a living stump. A stump that, because its roots are wound and bound with the roots of other great trees on every side, a stump that defiantly and miraculously draws strength and sustenance from them. A stump that, given the reach of its roots, still even anchors and supports and ministers to those trees standing nearby. A stump that lives though it dies, and indeed may